Welcome to Inside Dirt, presented by ATVScene.com, your passport to the behind-the-scenes world of the WPSA Power Sports ATV Tour, the nation's leading ATV racing series. Inside Dirt is hosted by Mark Strawbanger and John Pellin.
Okay, this is Inside Dirt. I am John Pellin. To my right, the one and only Banger, Mark Strawbanger. This is round 8. We're coming to you from Rossville, Indiana, the Amsoil Wildcat Open Championship. And Mark, what do you have to say?
I'll tell you what, this is a pivotal round on this year's tour. Two riders returned to victory lane in the pro class, while two others took over the points lead. Also in our feature segment, we'll talk to Mark Baldwin, who, though he is here supporting the Kawasaki team, I believe his mind was further north in the birthplace of ATV racing.
You know, my favorite part of this weekend, Mark, it was the less stress. It was a single round. We didn't have to go wide open and do a double round. That's a lot of work. Do you agree?
I agree, especially from an announcer standpoint. It was just...
Yeah, we run, don't we?
At the end of the weekend, people would say, you know, hey, who won what? And I'm like... I was like, well, what day are we talking about? It was a whirlwind. But, you know, Chris Earlywine was looking down on us, him and God bless us, with beautiful weather this weekend. And I got off the plane in Indianapolis. It was 68 degrees at about noon. And I've come out of Florida, 100-degree weather.
Right.
And just an awesome weekend.
Oh, we had a nice breeze. I mean, I didn't think I ran the air conditioner all weekend. It was perfect in here.
It was.
But you know what? Hats off to Demetrius Knob, too. Not only do we have great weather, but I really like that guy. It's his track here. He's labored over this thing for a couple, 4 or 5 years now, I believe. And I got a little history with Demetrius. It was myself and Brad Phillips. Brad introduced me to him, and next thing you know, we were doing a WPSA round here, as well as our 6 hours of Indiana. So I got to know Demetrius pretty well, and great guy, and I'm glad things are working out for him over here. And it looks like WPSA is here for the long haul. I believe they're coming next year, and I think Demi did a great job with the track, and I don't know, he's just a really gracious guy, and it was cool that we're welcomed somewhere.
You know, it's wild too, because he's a fairly young guy.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I'm guessing what, he's about 26 years old, if that.
Yeah.
He's a pretty young guy, but speaking of young people, Pat Brown getting on the podium in the number 3 spot today. John Natale taking the number 2 spot, and big money, Chad Weenan taking a big win here this weekend. This was Chad's 4th victory this year, and after some difficulties in the last 2 rounds, he came out on top.
You know, our trackside correspondent Justin Anderson talked to Chad. Let's go to tape and see what he had to say.
All right.
Yeah, we had our last round was kind of rough for us. You know, just got to go back to the drawing board and pick it up. I mean, everybody's picking it up out here. I just couldn't thank Suzuki, Yoshimura, Rockstar, MSR, Pro Taper, Wrath Racing, you know, everybody out there just stepping up and, you know, making it happen for me.
Just ran away with it. Just gone.
Yeah, that was definitely different for me, getting that kind of a start and being able to run the race that I want to run and not having to play catch-up. Is, you know, it's a big difference, and you see what it can do.
Is it any more difficult, though, running out front? Do you ever hear those footsteps in the back of your head wondering if, you know, if I make one bobble, I'm going to lose the lead?
You know, my mechanic, Ryan Cox, he's the one that notifies me out there, and, you know, he just does a great job at it. I couldn't thank him enough, and he lets me know where I am and where everybody else is.
Well, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
You know what's amazing about Chad? When he got the checkered flag, he kept going around the track, and he was kind of taking a miniature victory lap, and he came back around to the starting gate and rolled back up, and I asked him on the podium, I was like, Chad, you know, what was that all about? And he said I just was so happy, and all the fans were cheering me on. He said, I just rode around and like was thanking my fans, and it was amazing. And when he pulled up and got off his bike, he actually went and he high-fived all the fans along the fence line, and it was so awesome. to see him that pumped up and to get the fans in there. That's the kind of guy, that's what we like to see when somebody comes across the finish line.
I totally agree, and I think I got caught up in his enthusiasm as well. I hoofed it around after him, pulling the trigger on my shutter, trying to get photos, because it was just, you're right, it was really cool to have somebody that genuine, happy that he'd done something as good as he did. Because he did pull away. I think he pretty much left everyone. Kind of. What do you think? Was it 5 second lead?
Oh, yeah. At one time, he was almost an 11-second lead.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
On the podium, when I was talking to the guy, I said, it's like if Natale gets the lead, then he, pretty much keeps it. And I said, Chad, when you get the lead, you seem to keep it. And he agreed. He said that, it's... If one of those guys get the whole shot, then it's going to be hard to catch either one of them. And both of them agreed with me as well.
Right.
And, Chad Wien is just an awesome guy. He always remembers to thank his mechanic, Ryan Cox. And he's always talks great about his, the other competitors. And,
he's just really genuine. He's just a real guy. He's like the hardworking guy that... He's just still blown away that he made this factory deal. It's like a dream he's living. So it's pretty
he's
cool.
Living it. And what's also amazing is how many fans he has.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever taking the number one spot, Chad Wienan, and the crowd is just there. And it's like there's 10,000 people out there. Those people have their heart and soul behind
right.
him.
Right. And how about Suzuki snatching him up like that? That was probably a pretty darn good move because, for example, today, Wimmer and Gust... Tight, got tangled up. I didn't really see it. Did you see what happened between Wimmer?
No, actually,
and
what happened was Wimmer got hung up in the first turn.
All right.
So Dustin was like in last place, and he had to charge all the way through the pack, and then he got hung up with Doug, and I think Doug finished down in the pack, and I think actually maybe something got messed up on his bike, and. Dustin didn't make it back to the number 8 position.
What a charge. Wimmer's impressive ride to the front was the topic in conversation over at Dr. Rice's trailer. I was talking with Rick Murphy, the CEO of WPSA. He says he was in the recording studio, which is that enormous trailer full of television cameras. And he said he came out of there and it was one of the better pieces he's ever seen. He said that he wished that they went live because they had a perfect package just the way it came out, and half of that was because of Wimmer's charge through the pack and like Chad's enthusiasm. I guess it was a really good piece, so we're in for a treat, I guess, September when this thing airs.
Well, that's great. That's when we're announcing the races, we're focusing on the top 5 or 6, and we're looking back, of course, and keeping track of Wimmer, but that's what TV's there for, man, to catch it and bring the true racing action charging to the public.
Right on. Back to Wienan, though. Isn't Suzuki, they're pretty darn fortunate. Like I was saying with Gust and Wimmer tied up, it seems like they got all bases covered. Half their team is down. It looks like Suzuki's going to finally have a bad outing, and there's Chad Wienan to go take the victory anyway. So it's tough to beat Suzuki, that's for sure.
No doubt about it. And taking over the national points lead was John Natale.
I ended up getting hurt at one of those second races this year, and I was busted up pretty bad, a torn sternum, torn ACL, torn MCL, and we just kept fighting. I never gave up and rode through the pain, and my team was behind me 110%, and we came back, and now we're back in a points lead. It's just, I think this is where we need to be.
We were talking earlier, privateer effort, obviously a lot less money, the $1 million hauler over there, drive your own truck.
Yeah.
Now this has got to be pretty rewarding for you, as hard as you have to work for.
Definitely really rewarding, it takes a lot of heart and a lot of determination, and I don't have a lot of time to do anything else. I all day long my day is working on bikes, riding bikes, and working on bikes. So, I eat, sleep, and breathe racing, and it's finally getting paying off and getting me back where I belong.
Joe Namath was famous in saying that when you win, nothing hurts. I make you bet nothing's hurting right now.
Nothing's hurting right now, not at all. I'm just looking forward to going home. I wish I could go out and run another 20-minute moto today. I'm ready to train and come out and win the rest of these races.
It's interesting that that Justin's there talking with John Natale, because Justin came up to me a little earlier today, and he's, you know, John Atelli's awesome. He just, you could tell that it was genuine. Justin came up and talked to me about him, and he was just, it's one of his favorites, and mine too. You know, the guy's the most approachable guy out there. He was talking about, you know, he didn't want, of all the riders he walked through, there's Natale doing autographs, and it seemed like no one else was doing them at the time, I guess. I know other riders do, but Justin was just, it was kind of cool, that conversation Justin and I had about John Atelli being so approachable, and every, you know, all the little kids love him, and it's just a really likable guy. I'm glad our sport has him in their corner.
Well, I think the most amazing thing is he has overcome all that adversity.
Yeah.
He had a torn ACL, MCL, as I believe his sternum was cracked, or he had all the ligaments ripped in it or whatever at that one race.
And, well, he's the Iron Man.
Still Absolutely. Came out and finished the top 10 in that race. And this just shows you consistency wins championships. And he just got out there. And even though he didn't win the race today, consistency and hard work pays off. And he's leading the National Points Championship.
You know, he's definitely one of the legend ATV racers of all time. Someday when he retires, he'll be thought of in the same breath as a Denton or a Farr or, you know, a Shane Hitt, or, you know, he's an absolute legend. And I think he's doing it despite Honda not really doing much for him. I hate to say it, but it seems like Honda just basically dragging their feet, and there John Atelli is up front regardless.
Well, you know, I'm surprised if they even know his where he is in the point standings. I mean,
you know, you're right.
There's no representative here right. saying, "Okay, go, John. This is your chance to take
just
over
giving him some
lead.
Support and love." Yeah, and, I don't know what's with Honda.
He drives himself to the races. Works on all of his equipment. He
right.
has time to train all these other riders, and he works hard for everything he does.
Yep,
he's an awesome guy.
It's like you keep calling him a factory rider, but I walk through and I see Chad Weenan in the air conditioner. I'm thrilled to death that he's there because he just landed the deal. But you see, you know, John Atelli out there washing his quad or something. It's he's not really factory. I don't know.
Right. Well, there's some other folks involved in this sport that we have, and that reminds me of him and the Quad Train Challenge, and his name is Jesse West.
The working man, right?
Justin
on.
Anderson named him, like you said, the working man, and
we could do that. We should play the Rush tune right now. They call him the working man. I shouldn't sing, should I? It's late.
No, we'll pass on that.
Yeah, no singing.
But we will go to Justin Anderson's interview with Jesse West.
What do you think of your new nickname?
I like it. It fits me good.
Yeah, always working your way from the back, but it looks like you did it today, man. You unofficially took the points lead. How's that feel?
Feels great. Worked real hard this weekend for it. That was number one goal coming in, and finally got some good luck and got through the starts clean and just went out there and had fun.
Talk about some of that bad luck this year. There was the deal in Kentucky where, you know, you tore it up going into the rocks there and ran in three-wheel drive, and you finished it. But, you know, still, there's been a lot of trials and tribulations this year.
Yeah, it's been a tough road. Illinois, started out, we went to Illinois. I had the points lead. We had trouble in the water there, and I went to Kentucky, and I got in two bad start line crashes. The second one, it actually hurt me pretty bad, and I'm just now starting to feel good from that. So it took about a month to get my feet back under me and feel strong and get 100%. But
obviously, this is the time of the year to take the points lead.
Yeah, it couldn't be any better. I hope I got some time here a couple weeks to get the equipment back up to par and do some practicing and some working out, and hopefully come to the next round and add to that little cushion I got. But it can change quick. It ain't over by any means.
We really should cue in with Neil Peart and do some hardcore working man from Rush right now. You have to imagine. It's going on in my head right now, the working man song, because it is a really good a nickname that Justin named him there, the working man. I got it going in my head now, the Rush song. So you all listening, you have to pretend like the working man's playing, because it is pretty darn good. You know, he does the 6 Hours of America with us, and he's definitely the working man there too, because he's outnumbered and outsported, I guess you'd call it, running that big utility in the 6 Hours of America, and seems it does do well over there. He was just running second in the top couple laps at the 6 Hours of Wisconsin in the big utility. It was kind of cool, but Jesse's my bro, and I'm glad he's a part of this whole thing. You know, he was talking about riding a DVX Arctic Cat, so he's not just a utility guy. He's thinking about running some sport quad stuff next year, he was telling me. But, yeah, Jesse's definitely a great attribute for this series.
Well, it was amazing. He had the points lead going into the Illinois event, and he got hurt. He has broke his machine. He actually was riding a three-wheeler, per se, not actually a three-wheeler, but he was running in three-wheel drive. He's had poor starts and working hard. He definitely does. But really working hard today and winning five out of the last six starts, Chris Borich.
Just having a great time, and this K&M Warrant Racing team just put me a good ride underneath me, and just everything's working out really good.
Now, Jesse over here was telling me earlier that this was the best race he'd seen all year. Would you echo that comment?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, just how close we were to battling. Most of the races, the leader would get out front a little bit, but this here just worked out really well, and just had a great battle all day.
So we're going to see you at a couple more races this year. You done this year? You going to run New Jersey?
I'll be at Jersey. I don't think I can make the last round. It's going to conflict with the GNCC, but we're going to go to Jersey and try to go out with a bang.
Chris Borich is a magician with that quad, I think. It's in the last six starts, he's won five of them. So he's just about undefeated in this thing. Every time he comes to a WPSA, he's pretty much going to win five out of six starts. What was the podium, Mark? Was he up front? Who was behind him?
On the Quadrain Challenge in round number eight of the ATV Power Sports Tour, taking the number three spot was Jesse West. Second spot went to Chris Bithell. And taking the win, of course, Chris Borich.
You know, Chris is probably our best marketing tool for our 12 hours of ATV America, and I can't help but plug it. Every time we talk Chris Borich, I got to talk a little 12 hours America here. I was talking to him earlier. He's pretty stoked. He's going to have the same team, and he's using this thing as a warm-up. And I think it's really cool that he's not forgetting about me and the 12 Hours America and his sponsor Maxis, and he's going to show up down there with one heck of a team. Him himself, Chris Bithell, and John Natale.
Well, you know, we asked him today, of course, on the podium, of as well as Justin Ashton, if he thought he might make it to the final round, and of course, you know, he has some other obligations that he has to take care of, but because of some construction problems with all the rain at the Carolina Adventure World, there has been a change in venue in the final round of the Power Sports Tour. It'd be kind of interesting if maybe we could have that final round somewhere up around Unadilla, New York, and because I know his dad would load him up Saturday, and he could come over.
It doesn't almost doesn't matter where it's at. Joe Borich will get in that truck and have him delivered on Sunday.
Because he's in the top five, he's going to automatically be able to run.
Right. You know, he's seated.
He's already seated there, so that's a possibility.
So he could miss the heats on Saturday, show up on Sunday, do what he does best and win, and gather a bunch of points. He'll lose some heat points.
Right.
But that could be the difference of the championship the way it's going. Because I believe Kilby came in to, 12th today or something?
Yeah. Kilby had a tough day today. Going into the first term, it was Borich, Bithell, and Kilby.
Right.
By the time the checkered flag came out, Chris Borich was just about to lap Scott Kilby.
He must have run into some trouble.
Man. Yeah, right. He had some problems, but that's Quadrain Challenge racing. Sometimes you'll be on top, and next thing you know, you're in the back of the pack. But the most amazing thing I saw today was Chris Bithell was within a quad length the whole time. And you're going to see this on television when it airs. I mean, he was, I would say, never less than two quad lengths away from Chris Borich.
Every time I'd go to take a picture of Chris, there'd be the other Chris.
Almost like they were drafted.
Right, right. I was like, well, I guess I'll just take a picture of both of them. Every time I come, I totally agree with you. They're just next to one another the whole time. But yeah, that's Can-Am and Borich and Bithell team. They've got it going on over here. What's up next, Mark? What do you want to talk about?
Well, up next is our featured segment, and it's an interview with Mark Baldwin. Mark Baldwin, of course, here at the WPSA, and as I said earlier, his mind was a little bit north and east of here in Ashtabula, Ohio. Let's go to that interview.
Hey, you know, I'm originally from Ashtabula, and I grew up right across the street there from the track at Pine Lake. It's a very good racetrack and probably one of the best TT facilities in the world. And probably one of the reasons that actually myself and Tim Farr are involved in racing, Fisher family, been running that race for since it started. And probably Bill Fisher, the original track builder there, was one of the reasons I started racing three-wheelers back in the 80s. I was on my grandfather's farm and planting corn one day and had an old ATC 250. And old Bill went by in his pickup truck and turned around and came back and threw a set of tires at me. I was waiting for my dad. He was out on a tractor in the field, and I was waiting for him in his pickup truck. And he says, "Hey, come on, put these things on that three-wheeler, and let's go racing this weekend." So probably one of the reasons I got started in this business, and I think Tim probably had some of the same aspirations, you know, about 5 or 6 years later. And so it was a hard decision for us both to make, and I ended up coming here, and he went to Ashtabula to run his KTM program and took Sam Shahan, the other guy that helps us here in this program, with him. And so far, they've done quite well this weekend, too.
Now, that race in general, that's kind of, in a lot of ways, where ATV racing really got its start in this country, isn't it?
Yeah, it, like I said, that track started, gosh, probably about 40 years ago. And Bill Fisher owned a construction company, and they raced six-wheelers there. Some of those amphibious vehicles that a lot of people don't even know what they are today, but his son, and actually sons, and some of his nephews raced them, and then they started racing some dune cycles, or some Briggs & Stratton-powered things that were like a miniature three-wheeler, no suspension. They used to beat your brains out on them. And then Honda came out with, geez, their ATC 110 or 90 or something back in the probably mid-70s, and they started racing them there. And I have to say that they're probably one of the reasons that ATV racing has been so successful is because of the stuff that happened there.
Mark, you know, I got to be a little careful here, because when we talk Fisher family, we talk Baldwin family, I'll bring up the Keister family. I got nothing but love for those people. That's my roots. This is really personal interview you just did with here, and it's kind of touching that we're talking about Bud Fisher and the Pine Lake, because that's my backyard as well. And I got my start because of Mark Baldwin and Bud Fisher. And it's pretty cool that Justin got this. This is a really, really good piece. You almost need to rewind and listen to what Mark Baldwin just got through saying, because the guy is our sport. He's done it all, and I've seen it all. I've seen Mark Baldwin out there in the number 33 on his 85 250R racing Deerfield National, or the Deerfield Speedway. And I was a big fan of Mark's, and to grow up with him like I have, and Tim Farr as well. I miss him. I wish Tim was here with us at this WPSA. It's like I say, it's kind of rough to talk about, because I really, of all the people in the sport, Farr and Baldwin, Fishers, like I say, they're my roots. They're family to me. And it's a great interview. Justin nailed it with this thing out there on the track. He really got Mark to say it like it is. Some of the things he said are spot on. Fishers are bigger than a lot of people could ever imagine. In the 70s, they almost invented ATV racing. I know Curtis Sparks and Dean Sundel are out there in California doing it up on ATC 90s in the 78 and 7, no, it wasn't 78, it was 71. But so was Bud Fisher on six wheels at Pine Lake. And I believe that, you know, maybe, you know, a couple promoters, Coyote Promoting out in California, may have started ATV racing out in the 70s, but it was Bud Fisher and Bill Fisher that, brought it up in the East and made this thing happen. And I'm thrilled to death that Pine Lake still exists and Bud Fisher is still doing it after all these years. Bummed out, like Mark, that I wasn't over there. I haven't been there in 3 years because I've had prior commitments to my own 6 Hours of America and now the WPSA. But Bud's like my older brother. I love him to death. And Mark, too.
We know he was talking about they raced the amphibious six-wheelers.
Right.
Of course, I've spent a few years there at Ashtabula as well, and the dune cycles. And I remember as a child going to Panama City Beach and actually renting those vehicles, the dune cycles with the Briggs & Stratton motors and, of course, the six-wheelers. And, you know, that was a long time ago. And
right.
That was, I think, before there was such thing as ATVs. So they were racing there way before ATCs, I guess I should say, were even around. And, you know, one thing, there's one race that I missed that I really wish I would have gone to, and that was that Legends race. It was phenomenal.
Oh, we could bring up a ton. We could go on for hours now.
Yeah,
now you hit something big with me. Legends 2000. That's
just
my
remember,
baby.
I remember yep. the logo for that with Curtis Sparks.
Right. That's my prized possession, Mark. I've got... I'll take it with me forever. I got Legends 2000 Hart and Coe and Sundell and Jimmy White, Tim Helter, all these pros. I can't now. I shouldn't have started naming them because I'm going to start forgetting them. Alan Knowles, they can go on and on. Gary Denton, John Scott. But all these, the pros, it was the coolest race ever. And for you to bring that up, that's Pine Lake. And it was at the correct spot, I believe, in the United States.
You know what's
perfect.
Amazing, though, is those were small bore machines. Those weren't... they were like 90s, 110s, I think 200s at the most.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Those were, and no suspension.
Right.
They were just, you know, solid steel forks. And
that's when, yeah, Curtis Sparks was racing those things. And
that was the all-terrain cycles. I believe back then it was the AATVA, if I'm not mistaken, the American All-Terrain Vehicle Association.
Right. Which
I really wish I'd have never missed that event. And Mark Baldwin is just so full of knowledge. 35 years he hasn't missed a race there in 35 years, and it's a shame that you know, Honda had to cut back their support, and RSC would probably be there today.
Yeah, you know, all those years led up to the huge rivalry between Honda and Kawasaki, and kind of interesting that Mark's wearing a Kawasaki jersey now after all those years. And you know, Justin, like I said, did a great job getting this interview, and it's going to continue. He's got more to say with Mark Baldwin. Let's go to tape.
You know, I've been involved with Honda, with Tim's program for a long, long time, and you know, it's a large, Honda's a large corporation, and they had some budget cuts and stuff, and we didn't get the support this year from Honda that we had thought we were going to get. So Tim had some aspirations to do some things with a company that maybe was a little closer to his home than what Honda was, when that's where the KTM program came into play for him. As far as the Kawasaki program, Jimmy and Reed over at Kawasaki stepped up and provided some bikes and parts and stuff for us for this year, and some things for the riders, and just to keep our motocross program going, and kind of R&D program, and just doing a lot of different things, you know. So it's been a very interesting year. I've had a lot of new machines to work on. It's been kind of challenging, but you know, it's all in development. And if Tim and I wouldn't have done some things probably back in the late 90s with some four strokes, maybe we wouldn't even have some of the four strokes we have today. So you know, you gotta work on new machines when they come out, and you know, we pretty much got the Hondas figured out. I still work on them all the time. I mean, it just, you know, it just broadens our customer base when we can work on different models and makes and brands. And so, like I said, it's been challenging, but overall it's been a real good year, you know?
And that's the interesting part of it. I mean, Kawasaki is obviously in development mode with this new 450, and you're a big part of that, being sort of the privateer arm of their operation.
Yeah. Needless to say, I've got quite a bit of experience, and they respect that, you know. And it's been a challenge to get it all put together as fast as we had to do it, but so far we've done quite well, and it seems like every week the riders get more used to the equipment. I'll find some things that work better in the engine package or exhaust system, or you know, work on some suspension components that better the machine, and it just evolves and keeps progressing.
I think Honda had a gem in those two. It's like a free research and development team they had going. And I think Farr and Baldwin ended up being almost like unsung heroes for Honda, because I remember the 250X that Tim Farr used to ride. His thing was just sick, and it was because of their determination to make it something. And then that carried over. Tim Farr went into almost single-handedly, I can't say single-handedly, but very instrumental in Lager's success, PEP's success. Tim is and Mark together are geniuses when it comes to setup. And I think a lot of the equipment you're seeing nowadays is derives from a Lager chassis and a PEP suspension because of their efforts. It's pretty cool.
Well, you know, that reminds me a lot of Jimmy White and Reed. They have probably just as long or longer history together as Mark and Tim. So really, they're taking those two riders and those two teams and combining them. And it's great that Kawasaki is hooking up Mark Baldwin with bikes and parts. And as you can see from the performance of Mark Kendall and Josh Upperman today,
instantly, it didn't take them many races, and it's really
paying off. Mark Kendall, of course, taking a win today in one of his races, and Josh Upperman, I believe, finishing in the sixth spot. I'm not sure about that, but either fifth or sixth spot. So it's paying off. And like I said, Mark Baldwin, Tim Farr, Jimmy Reed, and I mean Jimmy White and Reed
Nordine.
Nordine, of course, two teams that have worked together
forever.
Forever.
Yeah,
this is just amazing.
Right. Good point.
They have worked together, and I think that Kawasaki made a very good choice.
Honda's loss is Kawasaki's gain, and now we get to talk a little about KTM. Justin has more from Mark Baldwin on the KTM stuff coming up.
I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen there. It all depends on their production schedule. I know that their main focus is their primary part of the motorcycle business. At least that's my understanding, is the more the woods and cross-country stuff. So that's the machine they're aiming to come out with first. And I believe that's going to be released to the public sometime in September. I may be off there a little bit, but that's from kind of what I'm getting from those guys. That's what it looks like. And you know, they're definitely a race-oriented company, and they seem to be very into any of the input Tim gives them, and it seems like they're going to be pretty darn good to work with.
You know, Mark Baldwin talks about KTM there, and I kind of need to repeat what I said about Farr's past with the Lager chassis. I'm going to go ahead and put two and two together, and I think KTM is going to come out with a very similar chassis to the Lagers. It may even be a chromoly steel chassis with built for definite race specs. If Farr's involved with it and they're listening to him, I can't see why this thing won't be top-notch. And I think Mark's right. KTM is going to come out swinging.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've also seen a KTM motor and a Walsh racecraft frame as well in the past. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly how this KTM is put together.
You know, KTM also, I interrupt you, but they're already proving that they're very into racing. We talked about Pine Lake. It wasn't just the Pine Lake National. It was the KTM Pine Lake National. KTM was the title sponsor for that race this weekend.
I don't know if you saw the there's a photo in a national publication. I think it was on the second to the last page of Tim Farr on the KTM,
right.
That Extreme Dirt Track
Greenbrier
TT. That machine was, that thing just looked bad to the bone.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think, like I said, I think if Tim's involved, I think there's going to be some serious second looks next year when that thing's unveiled. And I gotta think they gotta be in the WPSA with that KTM. I don't want to see why they wouldn't come over here and compete where it counts, you know. And it's kind of cool that it is named the Pine Lake TT, but it's cool that Farr went out there and won on it today as well. He won the unlimited class, and typical Farr Pine Lake style, went out and killed everybody on that new KTM. But I think they're going to, for a while, they're going to dabble with cross country, but I think they'll probably end up doing everything. But I think for the first year, do you think I'm correct, Mark? It's just going to be a cross-country effort, or I have no idea. I'm just asking you what you
well,
think.
Well, you know, yes, I agree with you, John, but they definitely need to focus on the WPSA
right.
Power Sports.
They got 80 million households. How
that's
you not?
Right. Speaking of which, today's race will be televised on ESPN2 on September 7th at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The next race for the WPSA Power Sports ATV Tour is the Raceway Park National, scheduled for August 18th and 19th at the Old Bridge Township Raceway Park in Englishtown, New Jersey. For John Pellin and Justin Anderson, my name is Mark Straubinger, the voice of the Power Sports Tour, hoping you join us for the next edition of Inside Dirt.